Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, your multidimensional RPG podcast. Hello, fellow gamer. Welcome to episode 266 of Game Master's Journey. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. On this show, we discuss the craft and the art of game mastering. I've been running RPGs for over 28 years now, and I produce this show in the hopes that you can benefit from my experience, my triumphs, and my mistakes. Brett is joining me on the show again today, and we are continuing our exploration of the Dungeon Master's Guide for D&D 5th Edition. We are continuing Chapter 9, Dungeon Master's Workshop, and today we're going to be talking about adventuring options. So this includes fear and horror, some different healing options, some different rest variants. We also talk a little bit about firearms, explosives, and alien tech. And then finally, we discuss plot points. So the plot points are three different variants that you can use to really change up things at your table. And I think you can have a lot of fun with those. So I'm looking forward to talking about those later with Brett. Now, as we're getting towards the end of October, November is coming up. And for you writers out there, you know that November is NaNoWriMo, which is National Novel Writing Month. And to celebrate that, I have started releasing my novel, Dawn of Endless Night, on my website over at starwalkerstudios.com on the blog. So this is a novel I wrote a few years ago and have edited quite a few times. And so in recent months, I've been going through it again, doing one final polishing editing pass, and I am releasing it on my blog chapter by chapter. So each week I release a new chapter. There's already a few chapters up there, so you can get started. And Dawn of Endless Night is an urban fantasy / paranormal romance, sort of, but it's about vampires. And I had a lot of fun writing it. Hope you enjoy reading it. So if you're interested in that, you can go check that out at starwalkerstudios.com. All right, so without any further ado, let's get Brett on the horn, and we are going to start talking about the Dungeon Master's Tools in the Dungeon Master's Guide, Chapter 9, Dungeon Master's Workshop. So today we start the Adventuring Options section. And the first thing in here is fear and horror.
Wow.
Yeah.
Almost October.
Yeah, this is almost seasonal.
That's right.
Yeah, so fear is for when adventurers confront threats they have no hope of overcoming. You can have them make a wisdom saving throw set to DC according to the circumstances. And then if they fail, they become frightened for 1 minute. And then they can repeat the save at the end of each of their turns, and the effect ends when they get a successful save. So that's pretty simple.
I don't know. So these are all optional rules, right? These are all from the Dungeon Master's Workshop, Chapter 9.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this one? I like to, because I like running scary. Well, I like running games that I think are scary. Whether or not I scare the players, I don't know, but so that kind of environment, I don't like the idea of making them roll to see if they're affected by it. I like just seeing if it plays out. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I just looked up the frightened condition.
Yeah.
So when you're frightened, you have disadvantage on ability checks and attack rolls while the source of the fear is within line of sight, and you can't willingly move closer to the source of the fear. I mean, I guess my, or the time I see frightened the most is with dragons, with the dragon fear.
Yeah.
You're making that save to be
frightened. I don't know. Yeah, I'm kind of with you. Like, I feel like it's better something that the players role play if they feel like their character is afraid.
Yeah.
I mean, I get like when you have something like dragon fear or someone casts a fear spell on you or something, you need some kind of mechanical penalty for that. But I feel like if you're running like a horror game, like a Cthulhu kind of thing or a Ravenloft thing, if you're going to slap them with the frightened condition every time you think a character would be afraid, like there's going to be a lot of disadvantage.
Right. Yeah. Right. Plus it kind of takes away the mood or the feel of the game and the story. It's like when you have to tell somebody that they're afraid instead of letting it play out. Like, okay. So if they're, I can't remember if this has happened while I was DMing, but it's happened while I've been playing. Where you come across something that you have no idea what it is. It's freaky as hell. And I do it with video games too. When I'm just weird that way. But it when you're confronted with something, I've seen it or I've played it before where I don't want to go running towards it. Right. I want to stand back and see what's going to happen. And then I suppose if you've got players that will just run in, they'll rush in and attack, but that could be fun. So I like playing with the idea that the actual fear of the character won't necessarily change how they act, but it's the vibe, it's the role playing, it's the story that ultimately that's what's going to make the moment memorable.
Yeah. I think I agree. I think I would save this for times when there's something that, like a spell or a magic item that's like forcing someone to be afraid.
Right.
Or like times where you just really want to show, oh, you're scared. Your character is so scared right now. You're getting disadvantage on these rolls. But I think it should be used sparingly.
Yeah.
And that kind of your go-to is just the players role-playing their characters and asking, hey, is my character scared right now? And if my character is scared, how would my character act differently than they normally would?
Right.
And I think that'll be a lot cooler than just always be like, make a wisdom save. Oh, you're scared now. You have disadvantage.
Yeah, and that can backfire on you so quickly. If you have a circumstance like that and it just gets frustrating with the player, they're not going to be mad. They're not going to be scared. They're going to get mad. They're going to get frustrated with not being able to do anything.
Yeah.
So that can have some serious consequences to the game itself and to the enjoyment of the game.
Yeah, I'm thinking right now about like, what if you were running Curse of Strahd, you know, and it's like, well, every time the characters encounter Strahd, I'm going to make them make a wisdom save to see if they're afraid of him. And they're probably going to have disadvantage just because Strahd's like the BBEG of the campaign. Right. So they're going to be scared and they're going to have disadvantage on attack rolls every time they encounter, you know, he's already tough enough. And I don't know. I definitely feel like if you overuse it, it would kind of take the impact out of it.
Yeah, I agree.
Of them being afraid.
Right.
So, well, let's go on to horror. Let's see what we think about that one. You want to tell us about horror?
Horrors.
Horror.
Horrors. I'm not going to tell you about the horrors.
That's a different saving throw.
Different. Yeah, that's later in the chapter.
Constitution.
Let's see. Well, it's... okay, yeah, I'll move on. Let's see. It talks about horror. Horror involves more than one simple fright. It entails revulsion and anguish. That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. Often it arises when adventurers see something completely contrary to the common understanding of what can and should occur in the world. So Curse of Strahd is a huge example.
Yeah.
In such a situation, you can call on characters to make a charisma saving throw to resist the horror. I wonder why charisma. Set the DC based on the magnitude of the horror circumstances. On a failed save, the character can gain a short-term or a long-term form of madness that you use. So I, as I'm reading this, I'm thinking of Vincent Price the whole way through, and I don't know why. but yeah, I like the idea of it like jarring their view of reality, and to the point where it brings on some form of madness.
Yeah.
But actually I can see where that kind of a role can come into play and be entertaining for everybody, more so than the fear.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Well, because you get a madness, you get to role play.
right. Exactly. And it just snap. It's like role playing, losing your wits. Yeah, but why charisma?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to figure out. I don't have my player's handbook up here. Maybe I should go get it. I'll go get it. I'll be right back.
All right.
Now I just got to find it.
I know.
I thought it was in the player's handbook. Watch, it was in the DMG and I went and got this for nothing. Oh, here it is. It is in the DMG figures.
Oops.
So page 238 of the DMG, they have some guidance for what saves to use. And it says charisma is for withstanding effects such as possession that would subsume your personality or hurl you to another plane of existence.
Oh, all right. That does make sense. And also, I feel like shit because you and I talked about this.
I know, right? It wasn't that long ago.
No.
And then wisdom is resisting effects that charm, frighten, or otherwise assault your willpower.
Okay, that makes sense.
So I guess kind of the key there between the two is wisdom is more about your willpower and charisma is more about your personality.
Right.
I guess. Seems kind of arbitrary to me, but they just didn't want everything to be wisdom, so...
Yeah, exactly. And charisma makes more sense once you understand what they're trying to get at, that it's not just like charisma is most often used for either, you know, charm or intimidation or persuasion, that sort of thing. So
it's like the strength of your personality. So I guess you could see this horror as like, well, if you get a madness, it's going to change your personality. So how resistant is your personality to being changed by being horrified, I guess.
Right. Okay. You talked me into that. That makes sense.
I'm not sure if I believe that, but I think that's where they're coming from.
It was a long walk to get there, but we got there.
I mean, I know if I was doing this on the fly during the game, I would probably call for a wisdom check. I wouldn't think to use charisma, but...
Yeah.
But it's also nice because it's different. They're using different abilities, so it's not like wisdom is the end-all, be-all.
Right. You just need strength and wisdom. That's all you need.
That's right. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess it's fine.
Yeah. I would use this over fear. Absolutely.
Yeah.
This can play well.
And I feel like both of these, the fear and the horror, are, you know, to be used sparingly and at the right time, not any time that you think fear or horror might come into play. You don't necessarily want to use these mechanics. But
no, I would only use them when approaching clowns. that's really the only time I'd use it in game or out of game, really.
Shall we move on to healing?
Yeah, healing. Everybody likes healing.
Yeah, so here we've got a handful of different optional rules for healing. First one is healer's kit dependency, and basically this just says you can't spend any hit dice to heal yourself during a short rest until you use a healer's kit.
Oof.
I kind of like this just from kind of a realism point of view. It's like, oh, you're not just magically healing someone. You're bandaging them up or whatever. And so that's kind of represented by using, I think a healer's kit has like 10 uses, I think.
Right.
So you're like using one of the charges of the healer's kit to do that.
Right. That's fair.
I mean, I like it conceptually, but I think because I started thinking about like using this, like what if I was going to use this? And first of all, healer's kits, I don't think they're that expensive.
No, so, it's also something that typically people overlook when they're grabbing gear.
Yeah. So if you're going to use that, you might want to just give that to people as part of their starting equipment, or at least tell them, hey, everybody should buy a healer's kit. But yeah, you know what? Let me look. I'm curious how much they are. I feel like they're like 20 gold or something. I just feel like this is something, if you're like, I'm going to use this, this is something you'll keep track of for a few sessions, and then you'll just be like, this isn't worth the hassle.
Maybe
to remember how many times you used your healer's kit.
Yeah. I think this is something that would be good to use circumstantially if depending on the game. So I can see a game being played where the story is you're in a rush to get somewhere, or you know, the party has to get somewhere, they're on limited resources, they're being chased, they're being, you know, whatever the crunch is against them, right? Something that they're up against the clock for, or something like that. This could come in handy to help tell the story of how your resources are dwindling the longer you're out here.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're doing like a survival kind of game.
Right. Right.
Like that would be cool. So I just looked it up and a healer's kit costs 5 gold.
Oh,
so I don't think it's even about like a tax, because it's like, even at first level, which is the poorest your character is ever going to be, if you said everybody needs to buy a healer's kit, I mean, everybody's going to have at least 5 gold starting money to buy a healer's kit. And then they all have 10 uses. And by the time they use all those healer's kits 10 times, they're going to have so much gold that 5 gold is going to be nothing.
Right. Right.
So yeah, I think unless you're doing something where you really want that kind of nod towards realism, like, I don't think it'd be worth having your players have to track how many times they've used their healer's kit and have to every so often go to town and buy more healer's kit. It's just going to be an annoyance. It's not going to be something that's ever going to prevent, like, they're never going to be like, oh, I want to spend hit dice, but I can't because I can't afford a healer's kit. Like, it's not going to happen.
Right. Unless they drop it and they're being chased.
Yeah. And I think something to keep in mind with all this stuff, I see people go down this rabbit hole all the time. And I used to think like this myself, is when you start thinking about like the mechanics, you think about what's quote realistic and trying to make the game as realistic as possible. And I think Jeremy Crawford said more than once on Twitter that D&D is not a simulation. Like the goal is not to simulate reality as closely as it's a game, you know? So
right.
The whole spending hit dice to heal, we're not saying that's realistic. We're just saying that's how you get hit points back in this game.
right.
So however you want to conceptualize that or visualize that so it makes sense to you and you can sleep at night, you know, do what you got to do. But it's really just a game mechanic. It's not trying to say this is how fast people would actually heal in real life, because obviously can't be at death's door, take an 8-hour nap, and then you're perfectly fine. Like, it doesn't work that way in real life.
Maybe you can't. I don't know. No, I've never done that. Like, I have to say that out loud. No, that's not something I've done. Something that I did notice with the healer's kit, they don't say anything about the long rest. So is this just to offset the short rest?
I think so.
Just to make that harder?
Yeah, I think this is specifically just for using hit dice to regain hit points. So it wouldn't apply to your long rest, and it wouldn't apply to, like, if you're a cleric and you're going to cast Cure Light Wounds on someone. Or cure wounds. I guess it's not cure light wounds anymore, but yeah. So, and that's the other thing, like with me, with the whole simulation thing, is it's like, we have magic in the game. Like, I could understand if this were a game without magic, like getting worried about how long it would take to heal or needing to use bandages. But when you're going to have characters throwing around healing word and cure wounds and eventually like raise dead and stuff, it's like, I'm not too worried about saying, oh, you got to use bandages when you when you patch someone up, you know. It's like,
you know, I was thinking, because of the long rest idea of how you can come back from the dead, the long rest, or on death's door, it would be interesting if you have a problem with that mechanically. It would be interesting to describe it more in terms of that's like the nature of magic in that world, where it's just magic is like boosting up life in general, and with rest comes healing and all of that.
Yeah.
I just went off on a tangent. Sorry.
Yeah. Kind of the way I tend to approach it is, I don't even consider a character being injured until they're below half hit points. So like that first half of your hit points is just you narrowly avoiding hits and it's like you're getting winded or tired.
Okay.
Because yeah, if you kind of narrate every combat, like every time you get hit and take hit points, you're actually taking a physical wound. Like it doesn't make any sense. And you know, you watch actual plays and a lot of times that's how it is. Every time they take damage, right. It's like, oh, you just got cut across your arm and oh, you just got stabbed in the gut.
It's because it's easier to track, right? Physically, it's easier to track.
Yeah. And it's more dramatic. But then when they go to sleep for 8 hours and all that goes away, that doesn't make any sense. So, you know, even I think you could even go so far as to say you don't actually take a physical injury until you go to zero hit points and the hit that takes you to zero and has you rolling death saves. That's when you actually got stabbed or got cut. And then that can kind of be represented by the fact that you're making death saves and someone's going to have to heal you in some way or another. But I mean, really, the whole hit point thing is not remotely realistic. So there comes a point, no matter how you think of it, that you just kind of have to like be like, well, whatever. It's not realistic.
Yeah.
We're not going to worry about it.
That's the part in the game where you realize it's a game and
yeah.
Just have fun with it. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah,
healing surges.
Yeah, tell us about healing surges, Brett.
Sounds like a wall socket is required. The optional rule—it's an optional rule that allows characters to heal up in the thick of combat, and works well for parties that feature few or no characters with healing magic, because you always leave the cleric behind.
That's right. No one wants to play cleric.
Yeah, these are also for campaigns in which magical healing is rare. So as an action, it says a character can use a healing surge and spend up to half of his or her hit dice. For each hit die spent in this way, the player rolls the die and adds the character's constitution modifier as normal. The character regains hit points equal to the total. The player can decide to spend an additional hit die after each roll. A character who uses a healing surge can't do so again until he or she finishes a short or long rest. Under this optional rule, a character regains all spent hit dice at the end of a long rest. With a short rest, a character regains hit dice equal to his or her level divided by 4. There's that math again.
Yeah.
Minimum of 1 die. For a more heroic or superheroic feel, you can let a character use a healing surge as a bonus action rather than an action. This might be OP, but
yeah,
might come in handy if you're running a small campaign with maybe one or two people,
right?
And they need to heal fast,
or like they said, you don't have any healers in the party, and you don't want to give them a magic item or have an NPC go along,
right?
I think this is something from fourth edition. I think healing surges were a thing in fourth edition.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, so this is basically letting you roll hit dice like you would during a short rest during a combat, and you can use up to half of your hit dice to do that.
Right.
And then in addition to that, during a long rest, you get all your hit dice back instead of, I think it's normally half. And then during a short rest, you get some back where normally you don't get any back. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I think this is one of those things you would only use it, I think, if you're in one of those situations that it's talking about where you can't do it the normal way because you don't have enough players or there's no healers.
Right.
So this, I mean, I definitely wouldn't want to do this in every campaign.
No.
And personally, I mean, I've thought about using this before because I have had groups without healers, but I've always went the route of giving them a magic item because this, for me, this is just going too far. It's just making it too easy.
Right.
To heal. Or, you know, maybe like kind of what you were saying before, Brett, maybe you have a setting where there's like this magical thing going on that people are able to magically heal in a way that you normally can't. So
yeah,
this could like work for
forest.
That.
Oh yeah. Like a magic forest. It's like a like in the Feywild or something, everything.
Yeah. So. Oh, that could be cool. Like use this on a different plane or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or like if you go to the positive energy plane or something, it's like, oh, you can just heal all the time.
That's because everybody's so optimistic on the positive
plane. So yeah, that's basically that. I mean, anything else to say about that, Brett?
No, circumstantially, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah. So now we have slow natural healing.
which circumstantially sounds awesome.
Yeah. So this is, again, an optional rule, and this is something you'd use because you're going for something specific. So characters don't regain hit points at the end of a long rest. Instead, they spend hit dice to heal at the end of long rest, just like they do in a short rest. And then this, I guess that's it. That's it. Then they just say that this prolongs the amount of time that characters need to recover from their wounds without benefits of magical healing, and works well for grittier, more realistic campaigns.
Right. So there's a certain friend of ours that I think would really buy into this. That I think this, especially if you combine this with the
healing kit thing,
with the healing kit,
yeah,
is like, yeah,
more realistic.
Very. That would mean for some really hard play.
Yeah,
and very open to TPKs.
And if you really wanted to shaft your players, you could use one of the rest variants we're going to talk about here in a minute and make the long rest take even longer.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Right. In this first two pages, there are ways to really screw over your players.
Yeah. Yeah. So
be careful. Use it wisely.
I would just caution you, if you're thinking about using some of these, don't just think about what quote makes sense to you, or right, what you think is quote realistic. Also think about what gameplay is going to be like with these systems and whether or not the players are going to enjoy that and whether or not that's what you want, because a lot of these are going to lead to a lot more downtime.
Yeah.
You know, where instead of, you know, oh, we went and we fought these bad guys and we rested up at the end and now tomorrow we're back at it, they might have to rest for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
And you may like that, you know, you may be like, well, that's cool. I have things that I want to develop with NPCs in the town. And I like that they're going to be forced to be kind of recuperate in town, and it's more realistic. And I have things to do with that time anyway, but you may not like that if you want them to just get back into the dungeon or whatever they're doing.
Right.
Could be a downside.
And also, regardless of who you're playing with, but especially if you're playing with people who have run with one of your games before, if you're DMing, it's, I think in these cases specifically, I think it's really important you talk to the players first about what kind of a campaign you're going to run, what kind of story you're going to run.
Yeah.
And let them know ahead of time that this is going to be a change to how it's normally run.
I'll bet someone plays a cleric.
I bet you're right. Probably more than one.
Yeah. And I think it's funny they don't actually mention that, but I think that's a very definite possible consequence of this, is if you use these kinds of rules, it makes healing magic much more appealing.
Right.
And if the players know going into it that you're going to be using these more gritty mechanics, you may see more clerics and paladins and bards and other people that have healing magic, mm-hmm, because they can kind of sidestep a lot of this with a few healing spells. And it makes those characters seem a lot more powerful and like something someone might want to play, which might be a reason to use it just by itself if no one ever plays those characters and you want to see those characters in your game.
True.
I mean, personally, I'm okay with people not playing clerics very often because I find the whole "I'm going to proselytize to you about my God" thing really tiresome. And I'm glad that I don't deal with that in every campaign. And I can't imagine if every campaign I had two or three characters of different gods doing, you know, arguing all the time over the campfire about whose god is better. Like, oh, that get old so fast.
Yeah.
That's why I like polytheistic settings. So it's like, hey, you're not really trying to convert anyone because you all worship all the gods anyway. So we don't have to go there.
Right.
You don't have to share the good news with everyone.
Yeah, I already know. And yeah, I've decided who I want to follow. Leave me alone.
Have you heard the good news? Yes, I have. We're polytheistic, so we don't have to have this conversation. That's the good news.
That's the great news.
All right.
You were talking about rest variants.
Rest variants. So yeah, these were healing variants. So there's also rest variants, and you can combine these at your peril.
Yeah, both sides too. You've got the way to kind of make things easier, and the way to sow the seeds of havoc everywhere.
So the first is epic heroism. So this uses a short rest of 5 minutes instead of an hour, and a long rest of an hour instead of 8 hours. If you're a GM that has problems with the 15-minute adventuring day, this is not the rule for you. This will make it way worse. It'll be a 5-minute adventuring day. So you might want to make combats more difficult to compensate, they say. At this point, I'm like, why would you do it? Like, if I have to do this and then I have to make all my combats harder to compensate, why not just leave it the way it was? Be a lot less work. So spellcasters using this system can afford to burn through spell slots quickly, especially at higher levels. Considering allowing spellcasters to restore expended spell slots only or equal to only half their maximum spell slots, rounded down, at the end of a long rest, and to limit spell slots with restored to fifth level or lower. Only a full 8-hour rest, because remember, we're saying now that long rests are only an hour.
Right.
So only a full 8-hour rest will allow a spellcaster to restore all spell slots and to regain spell slots of sixth level or lower.
Higher.
Or higher, yes, if I could read.
What about using this as an optional rule as like a boon for characters who are approaching or hitting level 20? If you can actually play a campaign that gets to level 20, say for level 15 and up or something like that. It's something that it's like a heroic boon or a heroic mod.
Or if you want to say the characters are something like demigods or avatars or something like that, that could be a way to show that. Nobody would do that. That's so dumb.
No.
But yeah, you know, like if I can get a full rest in an hour instead of 8 hours, like that's pretty major. And, you know, it's funny, the first paragraph, this whole 5-minute short rest, 1 hour long rest. Me personally, I don't like this. I'm like, I would never do that. But the second paragraph, I actually dig, like saying, well, if we did this and you could rest in an hour, your spellcasters only get half their spell slots back and they only get up to fifth level back.
Right.
To get the higher level stuff, they have to rest the whole 8 hours. I just kind of like that because I feel like maybe you'd use this if you're doing like a mega dungeon.
Yeah.
And you're you know what? Screw it. Let's lean into the 15-minute adventuring day. I'm going to let you get a full rest in an hour. But I'm going to use this option where, you know, the spellcasters need 8 hours to get their high level spells back. It could be cool because I think even playing a wizard, I think I would like it in a way because you'd have to get more creative with your spells and you'd be using your lower level spells more and really saving the high level spells for those really important clutch moments. I think it'd be kind of cool. I'm wondering if it would be fun to use the regular rest rules and use that option for your spellcasters and say, I don't know, maybe they need like 2 or 3 days of long resting to get those back. So the normal long rest is like this, where they just get half the slots and they don't get sixth level and higher. I don't know. That'd be too much. I guess if you're someone that feels that spellcasters are way overbalanced, that could be a way to dial them back quite a bit. Especially at higher level. I mean, at low level, I don't think it's going to have much of an impact.
No, but
once they have six level spells and higher, the wizard's going to be like, I need to rest for 3 days so I can get my ninth level spells back. And the fighter's like, I'm not hanging around in town for three days. Screw you. Let's go.
So you're creating a world where the wizards are all left behind.
Yeah. And they just teleport in for the big boss battle at the end, and then they go back to town.
Yep.
I kind of like it. Stone,
tell me where you are.
The magic users are like your heavy artillery. You just bring them in at the end of the battle, let them do their thing, and then they go home.
Yep. I'm just going to sit here for a couple days.
Yeah, probably not a great idea.
Or take a cart. Just bring a cart with you, and the wizards all sit in the back.
So what do you think about this epic heroism, Brett?
It has its points.
Do you see yourself ever using this?
Maybe. If I want to run something fast, then I might do something like this. I don't know about the 5 minutes. I would probably extend it to 15, but really at that point, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
A minute is a minute. I kind of like the idea if you're trying to, and I think I would use this more as a boon. That idea is growing on me.
Yeah.
Something for as the characters have become.
Or even an epic boon for like the beyond 20th level.
Yeah. Yeah.
Be like, oh, once you hit level 20, you get this. And now like you recharge so much faster.
Exactly. It's one of those Herculean feats that establishes you as the superhero or the epic hero.
I could see establishing in your campaign that basically when someone becomes 20th level, they become a demigod and that this is part of it.
Sure.
And part of what makes you a demigod is like, you don't need 8 hours of sleep anymore.
Right. Yep. And it's kind of especially if you've been playing for a while with the same characters, it's a nice little reward for having to take so many long rests throughout the campaign.
And I think I'd come up with something for the spellcasters where maybe they could spend their hit dice to get more spell slots back.
Oh,
so it's like you only have time for the 1 hour rest.
That would be
good. And you want to get a 6th level slot, you'd like have to spend a hit die and you can get that 6th level slot. So it's like now your wizard's even more of a glass cannon because he doesn't have any hit dice to spend.
Oh, shit, yeah.
But boy, he's got all his spells ready.
He's been at one hit point for 3 days, but we're ready to go.
And then maybe you could come up with some cleric spells that like restore hit dice. Like that'd be a cool mechanic. Like you cast a 8th level cleric spell and it restores like 2 of your hit dice or something. I don't know.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know. I feel like you could play with that.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But yeah, I don't really, other than your idea of having it be some kind of a boon for like a really high level character or for a character that, you know, becomes like an avatar or something like that. I don't think I would use it other than for something like that. But I think for something like that, it could be cool. Or like you were saying, like maybe you're doing like a dungeon, like a tournament kind of thing.
Oh yeah.
Like where it's like, hey, we have this big dungeon. We're going to see how far you can get in 2 hours. Like I could see using it for something like that.
That could be good. That could be good. Also, going back to the Feywild idea, if you're like in an environment that like boosts your everything.
Oh yeah.
That would be cool. But that would be circumstantial. That wouldn't be like a constant rule change for the whole
right. thing. Yeah.
Cool.
So the opposite of that, of course.
Game of Thrones. I mean, gritty realism.
Yeah.
At least until the last season. Then that all went out the window.
Well, yeah, because dragons. this particular version, gritty realism is what it's called. It uses a short rest every 8 hours and a long rest every 7 days.
Wow.
That is more. Yeah. I think there's a mod like that for Skyrim. This puts the brakes on the campaign, requiring players to carefully judge the benefits and drawbacks of combat, it says. Characters can't afford to engage in too many battles in a row, and all adventuring requires careful planning. This approach encourages the characters to spend time out of the dungeon. It's a good option for campaigns that emphasize intrigue, politics, and interactions among other NPCs, and in which combat is rare or something to be avoided rather than rushed into.
Yeah,
so that really goes into how you want to play the game. And again, that's something that you really want to discuss with the players before the game starts so that they know what they're getting into and everybody's on board with it.
I could see using something like that in like a city-based campaign. If you're going to like have your campaign set in like someplace like Waterdeep or Alondria in my world, where it's like most of the campaign is going to take place in the city and it's going to be, like they said, a lot of intrigue and social interaction. And maybe once in a blue moon, you go out of the city and fight a battle, but then now you have to go back to the city and recuperate for a week. And during that time, you can interact with all these NPCs and do all this political maneuvering. And so I think if you're wanting to run that kind of game, it could be a way to keep the characters in town more.
Yeah.
It's like, well, every time you go out on adventure, you got to come back for at least a week to recover. And I've got stuff for you to do while you're doing that in town. So, yeah.
It's got to be a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
That's a lot of downtime. I mean, you would have to run a game that is primarily role play.
Yeah.
Which I'm not I'm not against at all, but I'm hard pressed to think of any players that would want to play that.
Well, I feel like if you're going to run that game, there's probably a better game than D&D for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why would you run a game that's so focused on combat if you're not going to do any combat?
Fair. Yeah, fair point.
It's like most of the spells in the game have to do with combat. You know, most of the rules have to do with combat, but we're not doing any combat.
We're not going to do that this time. Now, again, if you add this with the other things that we're talking about, the healing options and the rest options, put all of that together for one hellish mad dash from point A to point B, like mini story or mini you'd need more than a one shot, but something like that where resources are scarce and everything like that, I can see that being fun.
Can you imagine a campaign with the healer's kit dependency, slow natural healing, and gritty realism?
Yes.
Oh my God.
It's less a matter of knowing you're going to finish the story and more just curiosity of how far they can get before they all die.
Yeah. How many sessions does each player get before they quit?
Yeah. And that is in the chapter How Not to Play the Game.
Yeah. How to get rid of your players. Right. All right, guys. First of all, every time you use hit dice, you got to use your healer's kit. Second of all,
you only have one, so 10 uses.
Yes. You don't regain hit points at the end of the long rest. You have to spend a hit dice. Oh, and by the way, a short rest takes 8 hours and a long rest takes a week. Have fun, guys.
Yeah, you're going to want more than one healer's kit. Yeah.
They're like, okay, we're all playing clerics. We're all playing life clerics.
Huh.
Yeah.
What if... Okay, so I was talking about the circumstance where you're in the Feywild and everything is like boosted, right?
Yeah.
What if you're in like not an anti-magic area, but like an anti-life area or something like that, where healing, just your body just doesn't heal?
Yeah. Like the negative energy plane or the shadow fell or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that. That actually, those three together in an environment like that as a temporary circumstance.
Yeah.
That could be kind of fun.
Or like the abyss, maybe. Like,
yes.
Just send him someplace really horrible and be like, oh, by the way, healing is glacial here. Yeah. I think you're right, Brett. I think that's really the best way to use these is not like I'm going to run a campaign like this, but like come up with an environment where this is the way it would be, and then watch your players scramble to get out of there as fast as they can.
Right. And then tack on horror.
Yes.
On top of all of these.
Yes. And you're at disadvantage.
Oh,
suck it.
Where's my pen? I got to write something down. Cool. Okay.
Yeah.
So the next one I have an issue with, but the next section.
Oh.
However, I know some people get into this, and I know, well, yeah, Critical Role did this too.
Well, I feel like these next few parts we can probably power through pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Just because what is there really to say? So so next we have firearms, which is basically if you want to have firearms in D&D, here are some rules as far as you know, how to decide if players are proficient in them or not. It says it's up to you to decide if a character has proficiency with a firearm. Characters in most D&D worlds would not have such proficiency, but they could use the training rules during downtime to acquire it, assuming they have enough ammunition to keep the weapons working while mastering their use. And then properties, firearms would have ammunition. Weapons could have burst fire and then reload. I mean, I feel like if you want to use firearms, go to page 267. Here's some stuff for you.
Right.
For everybody else, just forget about it.
Yeah. Move along.
Yeah. So Brett, are you a fan of firearms in your D&D games?
I'm really not. I'm a fan of playing games with firearms in them. Things like Shadowrun, Star Wars, that sort of thing. But
I
don't feel like they belong here.
Yeah, see, that's how I'm like, if I want to play a game where I shoot a gun, D&D is not the game I think of. I'd go play Vampire or go play Shadowrun or Star Wars, like you said, or any of a number of games, Call of Cthulhu, you know. Yeah, I don't like it. And then you get into just like the historical stuff of, you know, once gunpowder was available, how it changed everything and how now armor is no longer a thing because it's useless against gunpowder. Now fortified castles and whatnot are no longer a thing because they're useless against gunpowder. And so that's something as a GM, you got to figure out, okay, if I'm going to have firearms, am I just going to like throw out the armor table and throw out the weapons table? Because why on earth would someone use a bow when they could use a rifle, you know? Or am I going to say, oh, it's so limited that it hasn't had that impact yet. But then it's just like this huge can of worms. And there are definitely GMs out there with settings out there where it makes sense. And they're going to take the time to make that make sense.
Sure.
And, you know, maybe you've got these dwarves from this one land that have gunpowder and they start trying to take over the world. And that's the story of your campaign, is trying to stop these guys. Like, that could be cool. Mm-hmm. But, God, I really want to say something about the Wheel of Time here, but it would be probably spoiler territory.
Yeah.
And I know you haven't read it anyway, so.
No, I'm waiting for the TV series.
I will only say that this idea is in some ways addressed in the Wheel of Time and is pretty cool. And if you're interested, go read those books and you can see at least how one author kind of approaches that. And I think after you read that, you'll be like, you'll have a pretty clear opinion on whether you want that in your D&D game or not.
Right, right.
But yeah. So yeah, if you're interested, there's not much here at all. I mean, we just covered it.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit.
Yeah, firearms, and then the next one.
Explosives.
That one, explosives. Yeah, which talks about gunpowder.
Yeah. And now explosives I'm okay with. Like, I'm okay with using gunpowder as an explosive and just saying, you know, no one's figured out how to harness that energy and make a cannon out of it yet.
Hell,
yeah. But we do have this ability to blow things up, like, because who doesn't like a good explosion?
Fair.
Although you are kind of opening it up, because it's like, well, if gunpowder exists, it's not really that much of a step,
right,
to go from a bomb to a cannon. And just what if you have a player decide to do that, which is what would happen, is you'd have some player be like, I'm going to develop the first cannon in your world and end an age.
Yeah.
Because once people start building cannons, that's the end of castles and armor and swords and all that.
Well, historically, wasn't it, gunpowder was first used as explosives and rockets, right?
Yeah. Yeah, in China, I think.
Yeah, in China.
Yeah. But yeah, it's when someone figured out how to use it to hurl an object that things really changed.
Right.
Because, yeah, it turns out those stone walls that stop, you know, arrows really well don't stop cannonballs so well.
Let's say goodbye to that adamantine armor.
And that makes me curious now. I'm kind of curious, like, the force. I'd love to see a comparison between, like, a trebuchet and, like, an early cannon.
Oh.
And were they kind of comparable as far as the force that they delivered, or was it just that the cannon could be loaded a lot faster,
or longer was range. It
yeah longer, like, I'd be, because I mean, trebuchets are pretty scary.
Yeah, they are.
And I mean, they can bring down walls.
Fun to watch too.
Yeah. I don't know, do we need to say more about the explosives?
I have nothing more.
So they've got rules for bombs, gunpowder, dynamite, grenades. Next we have alien technology. So it's more this kind of stuff, you know, it might be the perfect thing for a certain campaign you want to run, but it's pretty niche stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And pretty short description here in the book too, page 268.
Yeah. And they have a little kind of weapons table here for firearms. They have a section for Renaissance, weapons, and then modern weapons, and then futuristic weapons. So, right. Yeah.
Mm. If you're going to use that, you should make the character using it roll a charisma save against horror. Yeah, right. Just saying.
All right. So next is plot points. This is some fun stuff.
Yes, this is good.
So plot points allow players to change the course of the campaign, introduce plot complications, alter the world, and even assume the role of the DM. If your first reaction to reading this optional rule is to worry that your players might abuse it, it's probably not for you or for your players.
Right.
Using plot points. Each player starts with one plot point. During a session, a player can spend that point for one effect. The effect depends on your group's approach to this optional rule. There are three options given below. A player can spend no more than one plot point per session. You can increase this limit if you like, especially if you want the players to drive more of the story. Once every player at the table has spent a plot point, they each gain one plot point. So before we go, so there's three different versions of this. So just the basics is everybody gets one of these points to spend. They can only spend one per session. And once they've all spent their points, then they all get them back. So it's like they don't get them back until everyone has used one. So, yeah. So option one is called What a Twist. So in this version, when a player spends a plot point, they get to add some element to the setting or situation that the group, including you, must accept as true. For example, a player can spend a plot point and state that his or her character has found a secret door, state that an NPC enters, or state that a monster turns out to be a long-lost ally polymorphed into a horrid beast. A player who wants to spend a plot point in this way should take a minute to discuss his or her idea with everyone else at the table and get feedback before settling on a plot development. So let's talk about this one, Brett. What do you think?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
I'll just say it.
I'm waffling because I'm going to sound like a complete hypocrite. I love giving players enough to go on, right? I like it when they're involved and they're helping to move the story along and all of that. But on the flip side, as a DM, I'm kind of a control freak.
Yeah.
I like not necessarily knowing where it's going, but I have a certain story in my head, right? That I without trying to railroad everybody, that I want to try to tell. And so that would really cause a hiccup.
Yeah. Too many cooks in the kitchen, I feel like.
Yeah. And it could go off the rails so fast.
And I mean, I'm sure this isn't the intent, but to me, it's kind of like, oh, so you want the power and fun of being the DM without any of the work or responsibility, you know? And, you know, I just keep thinking of, I like to make the metaphor of the DM being a director of a movie. And if it's like, yeah, like the director is, well, I'm sure directors are different, but you can imagine a director being okay with an actor being like, hey, I think my character would say this in this situation, or I think my character would do this, or, hey, I have this great idea for how this scene could play out differently. And the director may like the idea and use it. But at the end of the day, it's the director's movie and it's their vision that they're trying to realize. And if everybody has that creative control, like it, I don't know. Well, I just think it's going to be a mess.
Yeah. Yeah. However, anecdotally, you hear stories of how actors and directors work together. They collaborate on certain scenes or what have you. And the two of them coming at it from both sides really create this emotive or dramatic element to the movie or whatever.
Yeah.
So I can see it coming into play. I don't know as a full, the whole mechanic of plot points and that seems I don't know.
Well, but even in that, like what you're talking about, the director still has the final say.
True.
And I feel like this is almost saying, oh, well, if they spend the point, they can do whatever the hell they want.
Right.
You know, if it's a thing of where you as the DM still have veto power, then that's fine. But my other concern, well, first of all, I think the only way this would ever work is you got to have the right players.
Oh, absolutely.
Most players, I don't think this would work well with. You got to have players who are as committed and invested in the story as you are, who are going to respect kind of your vision and what you're trying to accomplish and not undermine that, who aren't just going to approach it from what's best for my character, but more what's best for the story overall.
Right.
So there's definitely groups out there that have players that could handle this and it might be awesome. But even then, my concern would be, you know, I'm setting up this scene, this like really dramatic moment, and it's lost in a discussion suddenly of something that the player wants to interject that's going to change something. I feel like it could kill your pacing and your momentum if a player does this at not the greatest time.
Right, right. So actually, as you're talking, you and I both, it sounds like we're on the same page with this, but as we're talking about it, we're both describing how you and I DM.
Mm-hmm.
And how we have a story, we go into it, and it's not a railroad per se, but there's an end point. There's like a goal to the story, right?
Right.
There could be a circumstance if DMs out there want to play a fully open game where they have an idea or they have a setting that everybody's in with no real direction, that this could really work in.
Yeah, as long as you set some boundaries.
Sure.
Because like, for instance, if I did that, I would say, you know, one limit is there are certain things established about this setting. Like, for instance, there's no gunpowder. So you right. can't like spend your plot point and be like, my character discovers gunpowder and builds a cannon. It's like, no, that's, you know, that's like, that's a limit. Like, you can't do that. Like, so I think even then, like, having some guidelines as far as what can happen or can't happen in the setting or,
mm-hmm.
And the other possible concern I see with this is if a player wants to suggest something that goes counter to something they don't know about yet.
Oh,
and yeah. You're like, I don't want you to do that because there's something going on behind the scenes that you don't know about yet, but I can't tell you why I don't want you to do it because I would give it away. So right. What do I do then? I just say no and look like a dick. And you're like, well, what's Lex's problem? Why can't I have a cannon? You know?
Right. Yeah, that's fair.
It's because, well, the big bad is developing a cannon and that's kind of his thing. And I'm not going to let you steal his thunder by coming up with one first, like, or whatever, you know?
Yep. Yep. Yep.
I think if you want to play with that, there's one of these I do really like, which is the third one. So I feel like if you want to play with this, go for the third one and just go for it. I would love to. Yeah. We'll get to it, but I'd love to play a campaign like that. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
But yeah, that
maybe we could do that. You know, Brett, we were talking about something different to do with our group,
mm-hmm.
and how everybody in our group is a GM. We could do the gods must be crazy kind of thing. That could be fun.
Okay, we'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay, so number two is the plot thickens. So whenever a player spends a plot point, the player to his or her right must add a complication to the scene. For example, if the player who spends the plot point decides that his or her or that her character has found a secret door, the player to the right might state that opening the door triggers a magical trap that teleports the party to another part of the dungeon.
Oh, geez.
So this is like GM intrusions in Numenera, only the players are doing it.
Right, right. Which could be interesting. However.
However, could also be a huge problem.
It could. Well, yeah, the only thing that this doesn't take into account, and keep in mind that this option two is only a paragraph long. So there's not a lot of detail behind it. Right.
Right. Right.
As far as the mechanics go, but you could be setting yourself up for some issues if you're running a story and you think this is a cool thing to do to help keep the players interested and keep everything kind of alive and a little random. They could be asking to do something, or they could be setting something up that could either screw with things down the road. It could be something that's not feasible in the circumstance. Any number of things and it's not simply not because they would do it maliciously. It's just something that you're asking players to create, like you said, like a GM intrusion without full awareness of everything that could affect that intrusion.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. I think like the other one, it's this is really dependent on your players. You know, yeah. if your players are all mature people and everybody's kind of on the same page as far as like the tone that they want from the game, and
right,
you know, I think it could be fine. Or if you're just doing like a beer and pretzels kind of game and you don't care,
yeah,
if things get completely ridiculous, it could be fine. But if you have like this vision and you're trying to like realize this epic story or whatever, all it takes is one harebrained thing from a player as one of these plot points, and it just all gets derailed.
Right. Right.
So yeah, really situational, but could be fun in the right group, mm-hmm. the right campaign.
The right campaign, especially. Yeah. If it's a lighthearted, not so strict or strenuous storyline, then it could have some value for sure.
All right, so let's talk about The Gods Must Be Crazy. I love this. I've loved this ever since the first time I read about it years ago. Still haven't done it, but our group could do it, Brett. As we were talking about, we're all DMs in the group.
Maybe.
So with this approach, there is no permanent DM. Everyone makes a character, and one person starts as a DM and runs the game as normal. That person's character becomes an NPC who can tag along with the group or remain on the sidelines as the group wishes. At any time, a player can spend a plot point to become the DM. The player's character becomes an NPC and play continues. It's probably not a good idea to swap roles in the middle of combat, but it can happen if your group allows time for the new DM to settle into his or her role, pick up where the previous DM left off. Using plot points in this way can make for an exciting campaign as each new DM steers the game in unexpected directions. Mm-hmm. This approach is also a great way for would-be DMs to try running a game in small, controlled doses. In a campaign that uses plot points this way, everyone should come to the table with a bit of material prepared or specific encounters in mind. A player who isn't prepared or doesn't feel like DMing can choose to not spend a point that session.
Yeah.
For this approach to work, it's a good idea to establish some shared assumptions about the campaign so that DMs aren't duplicating efforts or trampling on each other's plans.
That paragraph should be on both of the other two
boxes. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
You know, it's funny, reading through this again, not to actually play this particular option, but just out of necessity. I know I've talked about gaming in the past and how I got back into D&D with our friends Andy and Terry. This is pretty much how we started our campaign. We would run like mini campaigns with one DM, and then we'd flip to Terry would be the DM next, and then Andy, and then back to me, and back and forth until I took it over.
Cool.
But yeah, thinking of doing this in the midst of the campaign, like that can be a lot of fun.
I think if we did this with our group, I think the way I would propose we do it is forget about the whole plot point thing.
Yeah.
And just do it by session. So like, I'm going to run session one. Who's going to run session two? Brett, you're running session two. Danielle's running session three. And then, you know, ahead of time, oh, I'm running next week. So this is where we left off last week. I have some ideas what to go next, but it's still like every week you're like handing the baton to the next DM. So everybody gets a chance to play. Everybody gets a chance to put their spin on the story or introduce new PCs, or I think it'd be a lot of fun in a group like ours where everyone's a DM or almost everyone. I think it'd be so much fun. Oh my God. I'd even do it in Primordia, because I could see some DMs being like, yeah, I'd do that, but I'd do it in a published setting. I wouldn't want to do that in like my homebrew world.
Mm.
But I wouldn't care. I'm like, you know, if Brett comes up with some crazy thing for the world, like, I'm okay with that. Like,
it's canon.
Yeah, it's canon now.
Oh, by the way,
there are now Smurfs in Primordia. Who knew?
Yeah. Although for licensing reasons, we have to call them Smurfs.
That's right. They're just smorphing all over the place.
I'm on board with that. I like that idea. This option as playing through like this, I haven't considered using, but I like it.
I think it'd also be cool if we were to do this, I'd want to come up with a way. I mean, maybe we just do it. Like I said, like we just like like sit down with the calendar and say, okay, who wants to run this week? Who want, you know, and we just do it like that. Mm-hmm. But if we're going to do something with like, you just at any time can jump in and spend a point and be like, okay, I'm taking over. It'd be cool if there is also a way for the current DM to hand it off.
Yeah.
Cause I think it'd be fun to like set up like something crazy and it'd be like, okay, I'm done. Who's DM now? I set up this messed up situation. Someone else has to figure out what to do with it.
That could be fun.
It's like, what was the game? We used to play it in school.
Improv. It's like part of an improv class, isn't it? Where you set it up.
Yeah, like where you'd start writing a story and you'd like stop halfway in a sentence and hand it to the next person and they have to pick it up and keep going.
Yep, that's right.
It'd be like that, but with an RPG. That's what we should do, Brett. If we're going to do something else with our group, that's what we should do.
All right. You know what? That would make a good, in between adventures kind of a thing.
Yeah.
If we do like a, not downtime, but like a mini story. Yeah,
just take a break from the other campaign and.
Yeah. Or even with our characters.
Yeah.
Fun. And just like cruising around Primordial learning stuff.
That could be, I mean, I'd be down. I don't care. What's the worst that could happen?
It's funny. I hear Manny and Craig in my head. I can think of worse things happening.
Let them do their worst. And if it gets too bad, I can just have another cataclysm. I can wipe the map again, start over.
It would be so fun to play through with. That would be awesome. I bet you could convince all of us to do it.
Yeah, I don't think it would be hard. And you know, and it would be a volunteer kind of thing. So it's not like someone would ever be like, okay, Brett, you have to run next, you know, it'd be like, who wants to, you know?
Right.
And I guess if no one wants to, then whoever is the current DM is kind of stuck.
Then they I don't know,
maybe you'd have like a primary DM. Like maybe if we did it like with our campaign, like I would be the primary DM.
Right.
So it's like, if there's ever a week that no one wanted to, then I'd have to do it. But
Lex takes a step back. Nope. Nope. Washing my hands of the whole thing. No.
So this is definitely one. If you've done this, I want to hear from you because I've been in love with this since I first read it years ago and have never tried it. And I'd love to hear from anyone who's tried this. If you have some good stories of how things went down and especially the handoff, like how things changed when another DM like took over.
Yes. Yeah.
Cause I think that would be kind of the fun of it is have the new DM like really take a right hand turn. Like,
oh yeah.
You know, just take it in a totally, like every time a new DM takes over, it goes in a totally different direction.
Yeah. That should be expected. That should be the expectation for this. Is that it's not going to be a linear thing at all.
Yeah, it's like I set up the adventure and like you're working for this patron and you know, maybe I'm thinking, oh, the patron's really a silver dragon in disguise. And then Brett takes over and the patron like tries to murder us and turns out to be a vampire in disguise. Yeah, you know, it's like, well, okay, that's cool. And I don't have to role play my character being surprised because I had no idea what was coming. I thought they were a silver dragon.
It's kind of a thing would be good too if you have like if you pre-establish a setting that you don't necessarily have to leave in order to complete the story,
right?
So that everybody knows the setting, everybody can riff off of what's happening in, you know, immediately around the characters,
like Waterdeep. Be like, the game is in Waterdeep. We're not going to leave Waterdeep, you know,
right
kind of thing.
Somewhere like, that everybody can if they don't know about, they can read up on. They can establish certain parameters and then just run with it.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be a lot of fun.
Or you use the rule that if it hasn't been said yet, it's not canon. Once it's said, it's canon.
There you go.
So then I'll think, all right, cool. I love that idea now.
Yeah. I think it'd be fun. And you know, I'm not sure in our group, I'm not sure if Phoebe runs or not. But even if she does, like, not everyone would have to do it. Like, there's no reason you can have a player that chooses never to be the DM. Like,
True.
As long as they're fine with that, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And as long as it's all voluntary and it's all,
yeah,
you know, if everybody's just having fun with it. But it also says in here, if you're playing with somebody who hasn't been a DM before, this is like a good opportunity to like be like a mini version.
Yeah. Of what
you expect when you're DMing to like get a feel for it.
Yeah, because they don't have to do a bunch of world building or, right. You know, they can just wing it for a session and then someone else can take over. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just try it.
Absolutely.
Because even if you're like, oh, I'm going to try DMing for the first time, I'm going to run a one shot. You still have to kind of like prepare this adventure that you're going to be able to run in one session, which itself is pretty challenging.
Yeah.
Where with this, you're just like, I don't have to worry about getting to a certain point in the story. I'm just going to referee for this session and I can kind of take it wherever I want. And then whoever's up next week can deal with the mess that I leave, you know?
Yep, absolutely. And you don't have that first episode, the first session jitter of like starting everything out, getting everybody up to speed and establishing characters and all that stuff.
Yeah.
If you're new to DMing and are maybe a third or fourth person into it, then you have all that established and it's so much easier to jump in.
Now I will say, I don't think this is a great campaign for secrets.
No.
So for instance, like my campaign I've been running, spoiler alert, you know, setting this thing up where you guys are avatars and right. You don't know it for like 8 levels. Wouldn't work. Like that wouldn't be a great idea with something like this, because you don't know what the other GMs are going to do. And if you tell everybody, hey, this is the secret nobody knows yet, so they can all play along when they're GM.
Right.
Like, what's the point of doing the secret? Because everybody knows it.
Everyone will know by then. Yeah.
So I think it'd work best with a campaign where kind of everything's kind of face value. And when you're the GM, you don't want to have like far reaching plans. You just really want to,
yeah.
Or not even any plans. It'd actually be a great way to try just improvising, mm-hmm. because you don't really want to plan for a session. Cause you don't, especially if you're going to do it where someone can step in at any time, you don't even know, oh, I'm going to be able to run these 3 encounters. You might get one encounter done and then someone else is like, I'm GMing now.
Right, right.
So you wouldn't necessarily want to plan any more than one encounter, if that.
Yeah.
So it could be a great way to practice improvising for people like me that aren't super comfortable completely improvising everything. Yeah, I think it could be a lot of fun to play with. And I guess you'd have to come to some agreements as far as how you're going to run the game, because it would be really confusing if the rules are changing every week.
True.
So it'd probably work best to play it by the book for the most part and not have a bunch of like your own house rules or whatever, unless all the GMs can agree to that, you know?
Right. Or set the house rules at the start. So you have the first referee, all of you are getting together. You're creating this environment where you all know going into it that you're going to be DMing. You set the parameters for what you want to play. And then everybody plays by those rules, and then it's a free for all after that.
Yeah, you don't want to like switch DMs in the middle of the session and the new DM's like, we're using spell points now. Forget all the spell slots. We're using spell points.
Right. We're now in an anti-magic world. So all 3 of you wizards are gone. You're now aesthetics. Cool.
Yeah, I think this would be kind of adding to this, I guess. But I think what would be really fun is to, as you're doing this, and I think you guys did this in your campaign, is actually do world building too.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
So like for instance, let's say we were going to do this in our group and I was like, hey, let's do it in Primordia. Maybe instead of saying, hey, we're in Alandria, maybe come up with a brand new city that none of us know anything about. And say, hey, there's nothing established about the city yet. So each GM can do whatever they want and put whatever they want in the city. And if Brett decides there's a circus, you know.
God, there will be a, no, we're not having a circus. There will be clowns. We will not have clowns. Sorry. Yeah, that would be so cool. This is a great option. This is really good.
I want to send a huge thank you to Brett for joining me today and talking about the DMG with me today. We've been having a lot of fun doing this. I hope you all are having a lot of fun listening to it. If you have any questions or comments about the show today or suggestions for future topics or comments on past topics, there are a lot of great ways you can reach me. You can email me at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker, and you can call my voicemail 951-GMJ-LEX-1. That's 951-465-5391. Also, if you'd like to, in addition to connecting with me, get in touch with other listener GMs in our community, you can check out the Game Master's Journey communities on MeWe and Discord. And you can find links to those in the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com/Game Master's Journey. If you enjoy the show and you'd like to help support what I'm doing, the best way you can do so is to purchase one of my D&D supplements. I just recently released my third D&D supplement, Adventures of Primordia, which is a collection of player character options that I've come up with for my games. These are things like spells, magic items, sub-races, cleric domains, all kinds of stuff like that. So thank you to everyone who's checked out my supplements. I really, really appreciate it. And you can find those on the store at starwalkerstudios.com. And another great way to support the show is to become a patron. And thank you so much to all the patrons of Starwalker Studios. I hope that you have a chance to play your favorite RPG this week. I hope you have a chance to run your favorite RPG. I'll be back soon with another episode of Game Master's Journey. Until then, game on.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music, courtesy of Cloudwalker, Transboy, Renfield, Stanko, and Ish. See the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/Game Master's Journey.